Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Firefighting, the Financial Crisis and Its Lessons is a nonfiction policy and economic history written by three central officials who managed the United States' response to the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis, Federal Reserve Chair Ben S. Bernanke, New York Fed President and later Treasury Secretary Timothy F. Geithner, and Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson Jr. Rather than offering a sensational inside chronicle, the book aims to explain, in relatively accessible language, how a modern financial panic developed, and why extraordinary government intervention became necessary to stop a broader economic collapse. The authors frame the crisis as a fast-moving run on the financial system that spread beyond traditional banks into less regulated parts of finance. They walk readers through major turning points, the logic behind controversial stabilization actions, and the constraints policymakers faced in real time. A second purpose is forward-looking to preserve institutional memory, warn against complacency, and outline lessons about preparedness, regulatory design, and the need for credible crisis management tools. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, dry tinder how vulnerabilities accumulated before the panic. A central contribution of firefighting is its big-picture explanation of why the system became fragile before headlines erupted. The authors emphasize that the crisis was not caused by a single bad decision, but by interacting vulnerabilities, heavy borrowing and leverage, widespread maturity transformation, and risk-taking that looked safe in good times. Housing and mortgage finance play an important role as a source of losses. But the book stresses that the deeper problem was how those losses were transmitted through funding markets and complex financial linkages. The narrative highlights how risk migrated into the shadow banking system, where firms and vehicles performed bank-like functions without the same oversight, capital buffers, or stable deposits. When confidence cracked, short-term funding could disappear quickly, creating a classic run dynamic in modern form. The book also underscores that incentives, market optimism, and limited transparency made it hard for both private actors and supervisors to see the scale of exposure early enough. By focusing on system architecture rather than villain of the week storytelling, the author set up the later chapters once the tinder is dry. Small sparks can produce a fast-moving fire. The book structures the crisis as a progression from early stress to full-scale panic, showing how problems in specific markets became a generalized threat. Early disruptions in funding and securitization are treated as warning signs that the plumbing of modern finance was under strain. As conditions worsened, the authors describe how fear spread across institutions that depended on short-term borrowing and confidence-sensitive counterparties. They explain that contagion did not require identical exposures. It was enough that investors could not reliably distinguish strong firms from weak ones, or could not trust valuations of hard-to-price assets. That uncertainty encouraged pullbacks that were individually rational but collectively destabilizing. A notable element is the depiction of speed events moved faster than conventional policy processes, while information was incomplete and sometimes contradictory. The authors also highlight the centrality of confidence, including how market narratives and expectations can become self-reinforcing under stress. This timeline-based approach helps readers understand why actions that later look improvised were often responses to rapidly changing conditions, and why policymakers felt that delay could turn a manageable fire into a systemic collapse. Thirdly, whatever it takes, emergency stabilization and the logic of intervention. Firefighting is explicit that the most controversial part of the response was also, in the author's view, unavoidable aggressive interventions to stop a run on the system. The book explains the rationale behind using the central bank and treasury toolkit to stabilize key funding markets and prevent cascading failures. The authors frame these measures less as rescuing individual firms and more as protecting the broader economy from the knock-on effects of financial collapse. They address the practical dilemma that in a panic, governments may need to act before they have perfect information, because waiting for certainty can allow the system to unravel. The narrative also underscores constraints legal authorities were limited, coordination across agencies was complex, and actions had to be designed to work under intense political scrutiny. The authors acknowledge that such measures are unpopular and can look like favoritism. Yet they argue that the goal was to restore functioning credit channels for households and businesses. Their defense of crisis management is therefore tied to a broader claim modern financial systems require a credible backstop in extreme conditions, paired with stronger safeguards in normal times. Fourthly, politics, legitimacy, and moral hazard why the response was so contested, beyond technical policy. The book returns repeatedly to the political economy of crisis management. Stabilization actions can succeed financially while failing to persuade the public that they were fair. The authors describe how anger over bailouts, unemployment, foreclosures, and perceived Wall Street immunity shaped the environment in which decisions were made. They treat legitimacy as a functional part of crisis response, because without political support, policymakers may lose the ability to act quickly, even when speed is essential, A related theme is moral hazard. If market participants expect rescues, they may take greater risks beforehand. The authors argue that the right answer is not to make crisis tools unusable, but to pair strong emergency capacity with tougher prevention, supervision, and resolution planning. The book also highlights that financial crises create communication traps. Explaining complex interventions in real time is difficult, yet silence can breed suspicion. By discussing politics alongside economics, firefighting shows why crisis management is not simply a technical exercise. It is also an exercise in public trust, institutional credibility, and the ability to make decisions that are defensible under both economic logic and democratic accountability. Lastly, the enemy is forgetting lessons and preparedness for the next crisis. The authors present the book as partly a playbook for future decision makers. Built around the warning that the enemy is forgetting, they argue that the next crisis may not look like the last one, but it will likely exploit familiar weaknesses leverage. Short-term funding dependence and interconnected balance sheets. A key lesson is preparedness effective crisis. Response requires pre-existing legal authority, operational capacity, and interagency relationships that cannot be improvised at the peak of panic. The book also stresses the importance of regulation and oversight that keep pace with financial innovation, especially where bank-like risks migrate outside traditional banks. Another forward-looking concern is whether the post-crisis environment leaves policymakers with fewer effective tools. The authors note that political backlash can narrow emergency authority, while macro conditions such as low interest rates and high public debt can reduce the room for conventional stabilization. Rather than presenting a single reform checklist, firefighting emphasizes a mindset to monitor vulnerabilities early, act decisively when panic threatens system function, and preserve institutional memory so future leaders understand both what worked and why the costs of delay can be catastrophic. In conclusion, firefighting is best for readers who want a coherent, policy-centered explanation of the 2008-era crisis from people who were directly responsible for the response: policymakers, central banking and finance students, and general readers who have encountered fragmented accounts of bailouts and panic will benefit from its emphasis on system mechanics, decision constraints, and the logic of emergency tools. The practical value is twofold. It clarifies how modern crises behave, often as confidence runs through short-term funding channels. And it lays out why institutional readiness matters, including legal authority, coordination, and communication capacity, intellectually. The book helps readers separate the unpopular optics of rescues from the macro goal of preventing cascading collapse, while still acknowledging the tension created by moral hazard and public anger. Compared with more investigative or character-driven books about the crisis, this one stands out for its high-level synthesis and its focus on lessons rather than drama. It does not try to be the final word on blame or provide a comprehensive social history of the aftermath. Instead, it offers a disciplined argument for why the government intervened, what trade-offs were faced, and what future crisis managers should not forget. In a crowded category, its distinctive feature is the author's collective insider perspective, coupled with an explicit attempt to convert lived experience into a forward-looking framework for financial firefighting. If you would like to support Benes Bernanke, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.